Hashem Aleichem, welcome in everybody. Thank you so much for joining this evening. We're going to continue to learn the Nevuah of Yonah together, the last piece of the last section of the Tanakh that Chazal expect us to read in advance of approaching Ne'ilah. As the period by now, we're approximately halfway through Chodesh Elul. And the period that we're working on, the period that we're working towards, the goal of it all, climaxes with Yonah. Why Yonah? We had a chance last year to look at the beginning of Yonah, to look at the way in which the opening perek shows us some surprises about tshuva. That seems like a subplot, the sailor's tshuva, remarkable. I want to take a look now at another lesser told story of Yonah. Let's bring up the third perek. The first perek of Yonah was Yonah at sea attempting to escape his mission. After he spends time in the sea and he recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs him to go to Nineveh, that he needs to fulfill his mission. Vayidvar Hashem el Yonah Sheinis Lemar. The third parak opens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Yonah a second time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him a second chance to come through, and this time he does. Kum leichal Nineveh ha'ira gedola ukroi le'es ha'kriya sharenochi dover elecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yonah once again, I need to go to Nineveh. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a little more specific. I need you to deliver the particular message that I'm going to give you. Yonah goes this time, rather than fleeing westward into the sea, he heads northeast towards Nineveh, towards the capital of Ashur, towards the capital of that country that was the rising superpower in the Middle East. He comes to Nineveh. Nineveh was a tremendous city. Vayachal Yonah lavo ba'ir mahalach yom echad. He walks, spends an entire day just hiking towards the center of the city. And he delivers his brief message, Od Arboim Yom V'Ninveh Ne'epaches. Just 40 more days, and then Nineveh will be overturned. V'yaminu anshei Nineveh be'elokim v'yikru'u tzom v'yilbashu sakim migdolam v'ad kitanam. And they embrace his message. We discussed last time the inside of the Radak. They had heard the story of the miraculous message that would never make its way to them. Yonah had been tossed overboard in the middle of the Mediterranean because he refused to deliver HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to Nineveh. They knew there was some message that they needed to hear, but they never would because Yonah had perished in the middle of the sea. Yonah walks in and he has a captive audience. He delivers his brief message, Od Arboim Yom V'Nineveh Nefaches, 40 more days to do tshuva, and there's an immediate grassroots response. The immediate reaction is the people of Nineveh, they believe this message, and what do? Number one, they fast. Number two, they wear sackcloth. Immediate response of fasting, of self-affliction, of inui, in the Yom Kippur terminology, to this message. And then, fascinating, you see the next step of the story. Initially, Yonah's message was shared. He was speaking on a soapbox, and it was shared with the general population. The word spreads through Nineveh, and works its way up the social ladder, all the way up to the top. The king of Nineveh himself hears about it. And watch how he reacts. And let's see what the difference is between the popular reaction and the royal reaction. He hears about this, steps off of his throne. He takes off his royal garb. Switches his royal clothes, the royal purple, for sackcloth. So far sounds essentially like the reaction of the people. But then he makes an announcement. The royal criers make the following announcement. This is before royal Twitter. This was the original proto Twitter. The criers walk throughout the city proclaiming, the king has said as follows. Number one, Ha'adam v'habeima al yitamu mu'uma. No one can eat, no one can drink, even the animals. So the king is put on sackcloth, as the rest of the people, population already has. He's insisting on the fast. It's already been accepted as a grassroots fast. He's pushing it a step further. Even the animals have to fast. But then there's an added element. Vayiskasu sakim. They wear the sackcloth, the people, the animals. Vayikru'u el elokim b'chazka. And they call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu powerfully. Vayashuvu, vayikru'u, excuse me, vayikru'u elokim b'chazka. The king demands not only do they have to fast and wear sackcloth, but they need to call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayashuvu ish midarko ro minacham asher b'kapem. They have to do tshuva. Tshuva from the evil, tshuva from the theft in their hands. Miodea, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have mercy. So you see right away what the king is changing, what the king is adding. The grassroots popular response was, there's a tsar, we need to fast. The king says it's more than just fasting. Yes, fast, but there's a tsar, we need to do tshuva. There's a tsar, we need to change. And how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as you know, gives Ninveh a second chance. He sees that they've changed. He sees the way in which they respond to the nevuah of Yonah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu issues a stay of execution. Nineveh will not perish. Now this story is famous to us as we opened as the Tanakh climax of Yom HaKippurim, the Tanakh climax of this entire period. But this story figures prominently in a different context as well. Take a look at this next source in the Maamar Makamos, a Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak of Maseches Tanis. Maseches Tanis is about fast, but it's mostly not about the fast on the calendar. Maseches Tanis is primarily about fasting, not commemoratively, but in real time. There's a crisis in Eretz Yisrael, a drought, and there's no rain over the course of the fall going into the winter. The Mishnayos describe the way in which a Beis Din will enact a series of fasts to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he give us rain, pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to end the crisis, something that's certainly on our mind from a different perspective. And the Mishnayos give a lot of detail about the whole system of this layer, this level of fast, and those sorts of fasting, fasting during the day, fasting at night. Who fasts? A lot of details about the sort of the behavioral aspects of the fast. But then the Mishnah says, it's not just about the fast. It's not enough to have fasting. There needs to be a drasha. This is the original sermon. Take a listen. Hazakin Shebehem, you have a town where they're fasting. Hazakin Shebehem, one of the elders of the town, one of the Rabbanim, Omer Lefnehem Divrei Kevushim. He has to give an impassioned drasha. Impassioned Divrei Musar. And the Mishnah actually gives us the content, the core axis of the official drasha on a fast day. It's hard to know if this was what was always said, this was always the classic text that they were darshan about, or is this an example? But certainly, this is the prototype of the drasha on a Tanis. Achenu, what does the Zaken say? Here we get to listen to a drasha from almost 2,000 years ago. Lo nera ba'anche ninve vayar lokim esakan es tanisam. The Zaken points, let's take a look at the beginning of that last pasuk. We had skipped over it before. Now let's come back. Yes, HaKadosh, the end of the last pasuk is HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to give Nineveh a second chance. Vayinachim. But what precedes that? Vayar ha'elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw what? So the Zaken says he doesn't say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw them fasting. It doesn't say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw them wearing sackcloth. Vayar ha'elokim es ma'aseihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw their actions. Kishavu midarka mara. They had changed, they had done tshuva. So that's the official drasha on a fast day. The official drasha. When Klal Yisrael is davening in the midst of a crisis, the Zaken gets up and says, look at Anshe Nineveh. Be like the people of Nineveh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to them. And why? Not because they were fasting, because they were making real change. They were doing tshuva. Ah, be like the people of Nineveh. Fascinating. Okay? So, we're not so surprised, after all. Nineveh figure so prominently in our Yom Kippur, why shouldn't it figure prominently on other Tanyos as well? But here's a surprise. You see, Yonah as a whole figures prominently in our Yom Kippur. But the Zaken isn't looking at the entire Yonah. He's looking at which characters, which figures in the story, not Yonah, not the sailors, but specifically the people of Nineveh. The people of Nineveh listened to their king. When their king instructed them, you can't just fast, you got to do tshuva. Ah, nuance, sophistication. They followed through, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to that sophisticated response. They responded with tshuva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them more time. So it's specifically not the tshuva of Yonah, not the tshuva of the sailors, but the tshuva of Anshei Nineveh. They are the prototype. They're the model. The Zaken says in the Mishnah and Tanis, be like the people of Nineveh. Are we sure we want to be like the people of Nineveh? Are we sure we want to do tshuva like the people of Nineveh? It looks like it worked. Right? They did tshuva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted their tshuva. Here's the problem, though. The early Amorah, in both the Bavli and the Rishalmi, in the beginning of the second parak of Tanis, the Gemara comments on this Mishnah, they deal with some of the psukim here. Specifically, both Shmuel in the Talmud Bavli and Rabbi Yochanan in Talmud Yerushalmi are bothered by the following phrase. When the king gives them instructions, V'yashuvu ish min darko hara u'min hechamas asher bekapehem. They're supposed to do tshuva, to move away from darko hara, from their evil ways, and from the theft, asher bikapehem. Do tshuva from the theft that's in your hands, in your palms. Why so vivid in your palms? Why does it matter where it is? And let's say it's not in your palms. Let's say it's somewhere else. Why does it matter where this chamas is? So the Amoraim in both above and Yerushalmi commented that. They have opposite types of answers. Shmuel in the Bavli, in the Talmud Bavli, says, Asher bekapeyem, in their hands, it means no. They gave away everything. They gave back all the stolen goods. The Shmuel describes in the Talmud Bavli, even if one of the Anshei Nineveh, he had stolen some lumber and he had built a house with the stolen lumber. How are you going to give that back? Shmuel says, they did it all, outstanding tshuva. They would take apart the house in order to retrieve the lumber that they had stolen and give it back. Wow, extraordinary tshuva. Very impressive. The problem is in the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yochanan takes the opposite approach. The same phrase, min hachamas asher bekapeim, the theft in their hands. Why in their hands? Take a look. Talmud Yerushalmi, Yashuvu ish min darko ro min hachamas asher bekapeim. Amar Rabbi Yochanan says in Yerushalmi, what's with the theft in their hands? Only in their hands, he says. Mashaya bekaf yidei mechaziru. If it was still in their hands, they gave it back. Mashaya b'shiru tevo migdol, they already put it away in the drawer. Lo hechaziru. Once they had put it away, they didn't give it back. Where Shmuel in the Bavli says that this phrase, hechamas asher bekapeyem, It highlights that they did a maximal tshuva. They did an impressive, extraordinary tshuva. They gave back everything they could. Rabbi Yochanan, the Rishalmi, says they gave back almost nothing. If they were caught red-handed, it was still in their hands, they gave it back. If they already put it away, and then this call comes for tshuva, they stole 20, pickpocket 20 bucks from someone. I already put it away. I don't have to give it back. Really? Do you hear that? Now, mind you, I presented to you Machlokas Shmuel and the Bavli and Yochanan the Rishalmi, Machlokas Amram, how to interpret this phrase, Asher Bikapeim. But it's much more than just a question how you interpret, how you translate that phrase. It's a question of what picture we have of the tshuva of the Anshei Nineveh. The Bavli says, Shmuel says, maximal, very ambitious tshuva. Rabbi Yochanan says, minimal, they gave back almost nothing. Now, I got to ask you a question. Most of their stolen goods, they didn't even return. What tshuva did they do exactly? They were still holding on to the stolen goods. If they could get away with it, if they were put away in the drawer, they didn't give it back. Let's understand, so let's go back to that Mishnah. The Zaken says, be like the people of Nineveh. Look, they did tshuva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, gave them another chance. Be like the people of Nineveh. Really? You want to do tshuva like the people of Nineveh? According to the Bavli, sure, they did a very ambitious tshuva. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, they were a bunch of fakers. Oh, if they could, if they were caught red-handed with the stolen goods, they gave them back. But if it was put away, they didn't give it back. Bunch of fakers. Why do you want to be like the Anshei Nineveh? For Rabbi Yochanan, for the Yerushalmi, this Mishnah is very difficult. And the truth is, it's not just a question about the Mishnah. You could ask even better. I understand the Pasuk. Yarol kimis ma'aseyim. The Pasuk says that Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that they had done tshuva. He saw their actions. They had done tshuva. Shavu darka mara. What did Kadosh Baruch Hu see? Did they fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do you understand this commentary of Yochanan? Very strange. They didn't really give anything back unless they had to, unless they were caught red-handed. How do you understand the Pasuk? How do you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response? How do you understand the fact that we put them on a pedestal in the Mishnah, the official sermon on the fast days, be like the people of Nineveh? How is that inspiring? Now, the truth is, I think there's something exceptionally inspiring. But to do that, we need to take a look at one other item first. You see, if you look at further the Gemara goes through the... in discussing tshuva, the Gemara in Tanis moves on to talk about a Jew who is... imagine the following scenario. You know, a person touched on the days of Beis HaMikdash, men, women, and children, everyone would go to mikvah on a regular basis in order to become tahar. Tahar so that, you know, if I touch something that makes me tame, I came across a dead mouse. Dead mouse, one of the Shemona Shrasim, I touch the mouse, I become tame. I'm not permitted to eat teruma or karbanos or go into the Beis HaMikdash until I go to mikvah and become tahar again. So imagine that scenario. So there was a mouse in the house. I caught the mouse, disposed of the mouse, but I touched the mouse. I'm looking around, I see some people have background in the Washington Heights apartments. This is perhaps not just a hypothetical, right? You caught the dead mouse, you disposed of the dead mouse, but in the course of that, you touched the mouse. So now I'm tameh, so I'll go to mikvah, I'll become a tohar again. Tovel! I'll be tovel from Tumas Sheretz. The Gemara says, but imagine a scenario where a fellow picks up the mouse. The fellow picks up, I see, coming on the chat as the shiur is going on. People are telling me about it. People who still live in the Heights are talking about the mice they're finding right now. Mirtz Hashem, the schus of the shiur, the mice should leave you. So imagine the following, though. The Gemara says, I touched the mouse, the mouse made me tamei, so now I have to go into the mikvah, I'll become tahar again. But let's imagine a fellow's holding the mouse, still holding the mouse, that jumps into the mikvah, still holding the mouse. So leaving aside the severe sanitary issue of entering into the mikvah with a dead mouse, just purely from a halachic perspective for a moment, imagine the scenario. I'm going to the mikvah to become tahar, but I'm still holding on to the source of tumah. I haven't let go of the mouse yet. So the Gemara says, that's the height of absurdity. How is the mikvah going to make you tahar if you haven't let go of the davar hametame? Haven't let go of the sheretz, I haven't let go of the mouse yet. That's elementary, the Gemara says. You got to first let go of the mouse, and then you go into the mikvah. Tovel, the sheretz biyado. If I go into mikvah still holding on to the sheretz, here the Rambam quotes it from the Gemara, tovel v'sheretz biyado. A fellow goes to mikvah, still holding on to the source of tumah. Obviously the mikvah is entirely ineffective. Very vivid image. I see that smile. What does that have to do with tshuva? So the Gemara uses this sort of, this very vivid picture, the sketch, tovel v'sheretz biyado, as a metaphor for ineffective tshuva. I go into the mikvah, I'm still holding on to the mouse, the mikvah is not going to change me, will not create any tahar. The mikvah can't take off my tumah if I haven't yet let go of the mouse. So the Gemara says, look, sometimes you have a person who's who is trying to do tshuva, but you haven't even gotten to first base yet, the tshuva is not going to do anything because you haven't let go of the chet yet. Vizvada ve'eno shav. I'm saying vidui, but I'm not actually doing tshuva. It's very nice. You're clapping. Hashamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, yizbaradofu. But you haven't done tshuva yet. So the Gemara says, Mizvada ve'eno shav, you're going through the motions. It's like going into the mikveh, but you still hold on to the mouse. You're going through the motions of saying vidui. You show up to shul in Yom Kippur, and you're clapping achet, but you haven't done any tshuva yet. So what's the point of the vidui? It's worthless. It's like tovel v'sheretz biyado. You're going to mikveh, but you haven't let go of the davar matami. You're saying vidui, but you haven't let go of the sin yet. Mizvada ve'eno shav is worthless. Says Rashi, what does that mean, mizvada ve'eno shav? So Rashi says, what does it mean to have not done tshuva yet? So Rashi says, for instance, the fellow is saying, gazalnu, but you haven't returned the stolen goods. Well, yeah, you're clapping al chet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry I stole. You still have it in the bank account. You still have it in the drawer. So Rashi says, that's worthless. You're saying, vidui, if you haven't returned the stolen goods, worthless. That's Rashi Maseches Tainus. But look at the Rambam. Take a look. Take a look at the way the Rambam describes this. Kol mizvada bidvarim velo gomar bilibo la'azov. A fellow is mizvada, but he hasn't yet decided to let go, abandon the chet. That sounds a little different. Not that I haven't given back, I haven't fixed yesterday's sin. Rambam says that the most basic, I haven't done any tshuva if I haven't yet made a decision to abandon my path for tomorrow. You haven't made a decision about tomorrow, I raise a doma tov l'sheretz biyado. Interesting. So whereas for Rashi, the most basic element of tshuva is giving back, fixing yesterday. So if you haven't returned the stolen goods, you haven't done anything. The Rambam says the most basic element of tshuva is aziva sachet, is changing paths for the future. Rambam says if I'm clapping ashamnu agadnu, but I don't intend to behave better tomorrow, that's a zero. And take a look back at Halacha Beis. He says, mahi ha-tshuva. What's the basic definition of tshuva for the Rambam? The former sinner abandons that sin. You step away from it. You see Romi machshavto. You put it out of your mind. What does that mean? You put it out of your mind. The yigmar believe. Yeah, stop thinking about it. The yigmar believe. I don't remember any longer. No. Yigmar believe bo shelo yaseihu od. The Rambam says the most basic definition of tshuva is gemiras halev, gemiras das, conviction, strong decision, shelo yaseihu od. I am committed to not doing it again. That's what he means by yisiru machshavtom, means to change your plans, your thoughts going forward. Yazov rasha darko v'isha aven machshavosav. The Russian needs to leave his path. He needs to switch tracks. You're on a track, you're on a path of chet, you got to get into a different track. Where are you going tomorrow? Are you headed towards more chet, or are you headed towards a proper life and better decisions tomorrow? And then the Rambam says, v'chein, and so too also, yisnachem al sha'ava. You also need to regret the past. Acharei shuvi, nichamti. After I did tshuva, I regretted the past. Fascinating. So for the Rambam, the primary tshuva is not control Z. It's not undoing yesterday. The core of tshuva, of course, tshuva is also going to involve regret for yesterday. But you'll notice the core tshuva is planning real plans for a better, holier tomorrow. And Rambam goes on to say that you really reach deep tshuva when Ya'id Allah, very famous and poetic line in the Rambam, very powerful. Ya'id Allah Yodea Talumo Shlo Yashuv Lezehachet Li Olam. To the point where he who knows all the secrets, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who can see into the depths of my psyche, I knows me better than I know myself. Every person can fool other people sometimes. You can't fool the Ribbono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us in the deepest recesses of our insides. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be made, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can testify, Shel Yoshev L'zeh HaChet Li'olam. Now this person honestly intends to not return to that chet. Wow. And then he says, and you have to verbalize all this. Tzarich Lizvados B'Sfasav. You have to verbalize these ideas. Number one, this commitment to a different tomorrow, and also the regret about yesterday. Now here's what's fascinating. Rabbi Yonah is famous in his Shari Tshuva for highlighting charata, regret about the past, as the dominant element of tshuva. It's a reflecting on the past and wishing you hadn't done it. Rabbeinu Yonah, that appears to be one of the dominant, if not the dominant aspect of tshuva. Retrospective, looking back to the past and wishing you hadn't done it. Well, for the Rambam, that's regret is an element of it, but at its core, it's planning for a different tomorrow. I'm a different person, as the Rambam says elsewhere. So I'm going to act differently next time. And that's why, consistently, the Rambam says that the minimal tshuva, or to put it differently, it's not even a minimal tshuva if I don't plan to act differently tomorrow. Unlike Rashi, who said Tov v'sheretz biyado, it's a meaningless tshuva if you don't even have, you haven't fixed yesterday. Rambam says no, it's a meaningless tshuva if you don't have a plan for tomorrow. But here's what's fascinating: according to the Rambam, Tov v'sheretz biyado, right? If I don't have a plan for tomorrow, if I don't really plan to do better next time, then what type of tshuva is that? I'm not on a new track. I have not been ozev darki. I haven't gotten onto a better path. But let's say I have. I've made an honest commitment that tomorrow will be different, that the next time this situation comes around, the next time this temptation comes my way, I'm going to take the higher road. Next time I'm going to make the sort of decision that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants of me. So then the Rambam says, I have done meaningful tshuva. I have been gomer belibo la'azov. It's not total v'sheretz biyado. The mice are gone. I'm doing real meaningful tshuva. With that in mind, let's go back to this Mishnah and appreciate what the Mishnah is actually telling me about the people of Nineveh and about us. We will remember that the Mishnah had said that the official Musar Shmuz, the official drasha on the Tanis, is be like the people of Nineveh. They did tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted it. They didn't just fast, they had actions. So he said, well, I don't understand. But how do you understand this according to Rabbi Yochanan? He said they only gave back what was in their hands. They didn't give back everything. So what type of be like the people of Nineveh? I believe that if you understand that unlike the Bavli, the Yerushalmi is aligned with the Rambam, this fits in beautifully. They were not ready to fully confront their past yet. They weren't yet ready to give everything. It's hard. They had stolen and stolen and stolen, and they had a lot they needed to give back. They weren't ready to do it yet. Is that a perfect tshuva? Absolutely not. Will a complete tshuva involve returning all the stolen goods, rectifying all the past? Of course. But is it a meaningful partial tshuva? Well, that depends, the Rambam says. It's a meaningful partial tshuva if there's real conviction about tomorrow. Because again, for the Rambam, tshuva is not primarily about undoing the past. Tshuva is primarily changing myself so that the next time a situation comes, I'm going to handle it differently. That's the core of tshuva. So here's what the Mishnah is saying, according to Yerushalmi. Be like the people of Nineveh. They didn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Even though they weren't ready to fully rectify the past, they did make real, substantive, albeit partial, tshuva. Because they made a real, they said, we're going to have to work through the past, but meanwhile, we are committed to doing better next time. Vayar lokim es maseyim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw their actions, not returning the theft. They hadn't returned most of the theft. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that they were prepared to act differently the next time. As the Rambam said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us to our innards, and he saw that they had real conviction, real commitment to act differently the next time. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw. So while according to the Bavli, the Mishnah is saying, wow, be like the people in Nineveh, they did an incredible tshuva. And that's very aspirational. According to the Yerushalmi, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the people in Nineveh were far from perfect. They were still stuck in the slime of all the stolen goods they hadn't returned yet. They were far from done. But they had made a real start to their tshuva process, a substantive start. They were far from done, but they were had made real steps on the tshuva journey because they had already made a real commitment and they were planning for how they're going to handle the Yetzer the next time he comes knocking. And that's what the Zaken is saying. Be like the people of Nineveh. Take a real first, substantive first step. Think about the scenarios that you grapple with. Think about, number one, recognize your weaknesses. Recognize mistakes you often make. Be honest in a cheshbon nefesh. And then figure out, begin to plan for how you're going to overcome the next time. How you're going to respond differently to the same situation. It doesn't mean just because you've made that plan that you're done with your tshuva. But it does mean that you've begun the journey. You've begun the process of tshuva. Vayar lakim es ma'aseihem. Ki shovu midarkam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that they had switched derech. They had switched to a different path, a different track that was leading to mitzvahs rather than aveiros. They had gone a track they were headed towards avodas Hashem in the future. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw they had done a substantive start to their tshuva. And that was enough to catalyze a change in the gzeira about for the Anshei Nineveh. And that is a very powerful message. And a very real message. And I would suggest that we want to hold both messages simultaneously as we head towards Aseret Yemei Teshuva Yom HaKippur. We want to be aspirational and we also want to be step by step. The long-term goal is the Bavli. The long-term goal is to do total full tshuva, a complete spiritual turnaround. To over time, to really have fixed everything up. And at the same time, in the short term, to take the first step, to identify one or two areas that I know, each of us has our own profile, of which nisyonos are hard, which nisyonos are easier, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations provide a particular challenge for us. Choose one or two. And think about one or two common scenarios where I often fail. And think about the next time that's going to come up and a strategy for how to succeed and behave properly the next time the scenario comes to hand. In doing that, I've taken the lesson of the Yerushalmi. I am beginning to be ozev darken, beginning to switch track to a track of greater avodas Hashem, and we daven that Kadosh Baruch Hu will accept our short-term steps and our long-term vision and receive our tshuva ba'ava uvechesed and be gozer upon all of us v'shnas chayim v'shalom, a year and lives full of goodness. Thank you so much for joining this evening. May you all be zochet to gzeiros tovos going forward.